The first thing up is what?
Issues and administrator issues and updates starts with Commissioner Communications.
Who'd like to start? You're good, Ken? Election night?
I'm actually looking at my updated, yes, I'm ready to start. So the good news is that after a year and a half.
Turn your mic on.
Thank you. So the good news is after a year and a half that followed probably multiple years prior, we finally have a Fair Board agreement. So it took a, I learned the meaning of the words patience and perseverance and persistence. But we did work it all through. The last meeting included the attorneys from both sides. So we went through it line by line, as you know, because you were also present, and made sure that everybody was satisfied with every line. And so we do have an agreement. It addresses the very issues that we were concerned about, but also addresses the issues they were concerned about. They retained the ability to run a fair, to run an event center, as they should. At the same time, there's provisions for accountability and planning for the future, including master plan, business plan, marketing plan, et cetera. And then the other one was the issues of liability, and it significantly reduces the liability to the county and puts it where it belongs, which is on the shoulders of those who have the ability to actually run the event center and the fair. So we got there, and looking forward to our side signing it. My understanding is that they did the last week, so we should be ready to go on that. I look at my phone to remember what else. I've had the opportunity to attend a couple of CPO meetings, one on Mount Hood, and one last night in Stafford over the I-205 exchange to hear community concerns. And I'll leave it at that.
Paul, letter.
So actually, Jim, why don't you give us your DC auto transportation update, and I'll segue right into my update.
Washington, D.C. is fantastic. It's the best Washington, D.C. I've ever been to.
Don't go to the wrong one.
It was great to see our congressional people, even though the Senate folks were about 15 minutes each. Brought up the locks. Senator Wyden was just really positive about it. So that was great. We did meet with USDOT. USDOT was, I fell asleep. No, it was interesting, you know. Basically, there won't be a infrastructure bill. I mean, there won't be infrastructure this year. If it was, it'd be 2080. I mean, we 80, they 20%. But we did have a USDOT gentleman who was very interested about 205 and the Abernathy Bridge, and he specifically asked the letter be sent to him personally, and I thought that was very positive. That's basically Washington, D.C. Then I went to, I might as well finish. I went yesterday to Salem on the courthouse. It was a slam dunk. I thought the leadership on that meeting, it looked like we were going to all vote on everything all over again. I thought, oh, no. And then he said, well, we've already decided on the courthouse order. Let's move on to the request for maintenance and repair money. And we went through that list. We voted. People argued their reasons for it. We voted. Took off one, which was the courthouse expansion in Deschutes County. It was $20 million, which was quite large. It's also a new courthouse, so that they need to expand already. We took that off the list and voted on the others and set some priorities, and we were done. It was really, I could have called in. except I think it's helpful to have a commissioner there. And I've been on the task force for many years, so they really appreciated that. Anyways, that was great. Paul?
So the letter that you referenced, I talked to Ryan Winsheimer, the head of Region 1, DOT, Area Commission on Transportation. He was here last week. He talked to me yesterday. They, ODOT, sent them a letter yesterday, so they feel that they are, and Jim and this morning, and Gary Schmidt this morning agree that that has been fulfilled. So we don't know further actions needed there. As a result, and so part of my update, as a result of yesterday's meeting and discussion on the tolling meeting, they wanted to narrow the five options down, and I think there was agreement on narrowing, taking one off the table, and that was tolling one lane, one northbound lane of Interstate 5. They asked to take they asked to remove option D, which was a priced toll lane off of 205 as an option. I said, well, under the way it's put together, I could possibly get behind that, but my concern was is that I don't want to remove the option of an express lane, basically a price lane, you know, and then have that substituted for a toll all the lanes because of diversion, things we talked about Thursday in the past. The impacts to Oregon City, if they actually do that, because the toll that they're conceptually talking about could be anywhere from $1 to, you know, easily $4. $3 was, I think, was the number they actually used, $3.65 to build the bridge, and possibly enough money to build the other lanes with this amount of money. So the tolling number, or the diversion numbers, are a huge factor. That means that we would have people cutting through Oregon City, Canby, Stafford continuously. Spoke to Joe Merrick. I want to get a better idea of the accident reports because there's a gap in how those apparently are getting, they're not all getting to our road department. And so we have an issue there. So we need to really identify really what those, but the concern is, again, is safety. So the Thursday, the Oregon Transportation Commission will be in Portland, and they have blocked out a amount of time on their agenda just to take testimony on the tolling. So I will not be at the business meeting on Thursday. I will be at the OTC meeting here in Portland testifying. Jim's comments to me, unsolicited, were I want to make sure, correct me, I'm just going to paraphrase, I want to make sure that we're looking at everything. We're not just going to be tolling all the lanes. I think that's the worst scenario. That for diversion, that is the worst scenario, is tolling all the lanes. We made it very clear, consistently, from the beginning, that we want to see revenues go towards highway capacity on 205, adding a lane particularly. So that's the message I will continue to convey. I heard Commissioner Fisher, and I totally agree that, you know, diversion is a huge issue for those in West Lynn. And Lake Oswego to some degree, diverting through and up Stafford, 43, Stafford. Actually, there was a list in the report, I don't have it with me, but in the documents, they listed all of the roads that would be used for diversion. Selwood Bridge, Highway 99E would be a diversion. So this has got impacts both in the city of Portland, even if they toll the bridge, the Abernathy Bridge. But they do feel that under option E, which is a different animal because it's not actually a value pricing, it's actually a toll for a project. Could conceivably build the entire thing and possibly bond for 20 to 30 years for that amount of money, and could be variable priced based on the time of day and possibly even free at off hours, so there wouldn't be a toll. So I'm going to go there pitching and make the argument. I just saw an article that came out. I didn't have a chance to read it all, but I made a comment. I didn't really see it was in print, but basically the comment I made, because they want to continue to promote tolling all the lanes of both freeways, and that estimate that's $300 million. And that's the administrative cost, plus some of those monies would go towards low-income communities that would be impacted, financially impacted. And they gave us some examples of, well, that could be, if it was a $6 trip, they could get a $2 subsidy. So you can imagine, that's a lot of money being redirected. They would be taking all these revenues and redirecting it back, and there'd be this big, huge management problem, right? Where do you live, and how do you do that? Well, that's cost $300 million.
Who wants to do that?
This is what the tolling proposal really does. So administrating the tolls, the equipment, collecting the monies, plus redistributing the monies to low-income communities and dealing with diversion mitigation, it creates this whole nightmare. So it's at least $300 million nightmare, if you want to call it that. So my comment yesterday was, we're creating a problem that we really do not need to create. And that's really, okay, it's a $300 million problem. They've already identified that, so it's self-evident. So I'm making the argument that if we don't toll all the lanes, people can still use a freeway without paying. And if we don't toll all the lanes, there'll be less diversion. So why do we not fully look at all other means of having a priced lane or priced lanes that can benefit? The argument of one priced lane is, from the Truckers Association, is that they can't, by federal law, state law, they can't use that priced lane because trucks can't be in the fast lane.
But is that a law?
Yeah.
Yes.
But there are scenarios where if you have two price lanes, they can. And that is a model that I know in California. Trucks can use a second price lane. So
when you say they, are you talking the Transportation Commission? Are you talking about a committee of the Transportation Commission? I mean, who are you talking about when you say they want to toll both freeways?
That is ODOT.
So ODOT staff that hasn't gone to the Transportation, I mean, what is the process of who's saying this?
So the legislature mandated that the congestion price I-5 and 205. So the legislature decided that, HB 2017, so now it's law. So
not completely. Didn't they ask, say to look at it, study it?
Yes.
I thought they were gonna go to the Transportation Commission, and that the Transportation Commission was going to decide.
So
I'm just curious politically where we are in this process.
Sure, so I'll give you the sequence. So HB 2017, they mandated that ODOT value price, put together proposals, so on. Then ODOT said, okay, we're gonna form with the OTC, ODOT, the OTC staff, and the Oregon Transportation Board appointed by the governor, work on this. So they put together this 25-member committee, of which I sit on, and our work will be done in June. We will make either a recommendation or we'll give guidance or express concerns. It's not clear now. They're rolling that back because there was going to be a recommendation, and it looks like that may not even happen. And then the OTC, Oregon Transportation Commission, will spend the next 3 to 4 months, and I think if I read the paperwork right, it was August, that they will come up with a conclusion, a recommendation, and a draft for December of this year where they apply the federal government for any permissions granted that would be an exception or a pilot program for value pricing that are not consistent with current federal law.
Well, I have a question. Did the law say to explore the option of tolling, or did the law say they're going to toll?
It's going to toll. Do it.
Okay.
So the decision was made. I tell people the decision was made. Now, what it looks like is that's where the flexibility is.
That's where the argument is. Okay.
That's
I just want to be sure. I just want to make sure I had it clear.
But think about that. $300 million a year annually, every year, doing nothing, building nothing. That's we could do a lot of transportation.
That's just in collecting tolls.
If they
managing the system.
So that's the revenue potential of tolling. Now, if they only toll one, the less you toll, the less that amount of money is. But even if you tolled one lane or two lanes, express lanes, and had free lanes, so you're not forcing, you're relieving congestion. You're not forcing people off the roads, right? Because you're relieving, and basically, you will have an express lane which people will incent. They already did some modeling that show that people will pay, and it's already, we know that because it's being done in other states. People will pay for a faster trip.
So how can we politically better position ourselves to influence so that our goal, I mean, the reason why we had the discussion yesterday in the policy session, I think our goal needs to be to reduce congestion overall, not just increase capacity on a freeway. We need to reduce congestion which means we're looking at the whole area, we're looking at the arterials and this diversion. So our language, the way we talk about this as Clackamas County, should be to reduce congestion, not increase capacity on the freeway.
Well, actually, I understand where you're going, and that's really what we're saying. Well, so when we say capacity, so the capacity is the presumption that you're increasing transportation capacity, okay? Period. I mean, capacity is capacity. Adding lanes doesn't necessarily mean that's capacity, and adding a sidewalk doesn't necessarily mean that's capacity, or adding a bike lane. It's actually something that is real capacity. So that's why these traffic engineers and everything else put together what it may be. The other real word that you need to look at when you look at a highway is throughput. Okay? So throughput, it means that in a certain period of time you are moving X amount of vehicles through there. So congestion pricing or variable pricing that discourages people off the road reduces throughput. Well, there's a commerce element to throughput. So it's very complicated. All to say that, and I made this statement yesterday in the closing, is that, you know, we need to look at all of our transportation systems to increase capacity. That means transit, bike, ped, all the things you talked about. That's the message I'm putting out there on behalf of Clackamas County. We've said that before. We put that in our letter. It's really the building blocks that are in that letter. So we haven't changed on that other than we don't want negative impacts. And, you know, the Stafford Road thing is a very interesting one. I'll be bringing you some more information. But four accidents near the same place in 40 days on Stafford Road.
Is it near Johnson Road or where? That's a really big
place. I'll bring you all that information. But I had a good chat with Joe Merrick, and I hope to have to talk to Joe Merrick and Mike Besser, because Mike Besser was in D.C. I wanted to talk to him, but I haven't had a chance. So I'll bring you more information. We're all saying the same thing, but the language, the technical definition as it's used by these groups, these transportation experts, you really got to listen to language carefully and not take it out of context and realize that adding lanes may not increase capacity. So when we say we're at increased capacity, there's a presumption that you're going to increase throughput.
Okay. So, question. When you say those people want to toll all of 205, I just think it's really important that we, as the Clackamas County Commissioners, are organized and articulate when saying all of 205 should not be tolled, because it would divert into create other bottlenecks and congestion on arterials, and that would just be disastrous.
I think that's what we're saying. We do not think you should toll all of 205.
But if what Paul says is, when he says they want to toll all of 205, I want to make sure we as a commission understand who that they are and who do we need to influence, what constituencies do we need to activate, what kind of lobbying efforts, what kind of grassroots organization, who do we need to talk to. Paul's doing the heavy lift of going to all these meetings. We need to be supportive of that with the outreach to the community to make sure we have a stronger voice.
Well, then that's exactly what I'm actually been working. So thank you. I appreciate that. That's the kind of support that, you know, I need, and I'm happy to, and ODOT has even offered to bring in, to come to any jurisdiction and help educate, teach people, understand, explain some of these things. But the deeper you drill, the deeper you get into the weeds, the deeper the weeds become. You realize that it just keeps on going.
If you're saying right now it's the will of the committee to go to the Transportation Commission to say we're going to toll all of 205?
That's what I'm trying to
clarify.
That's the county's position. The room's divided. The table was divided yesterday. There are people that actually are saying, and that's the article even points that out. Mr. Kransky, for example, is quoted, and then right after his quote is my quote. But the room's divided, and I think that everyone's realizing that number one, we're growing our population by about, 50,000, 60,000 per year. In 10 years, we'll be half a million more people. We need to grow our transportation system. We need to grow our water. We need to grow all this infrastructure. And we can't have short-sighted naysayers blocking what is already 30 years over outgrown transportation system. Also advocating for transit. So I'm also, HB 2017 has a transit committee, because we're going to have 60 to 80 million more dollars. Those monies are being fought for. And all those monies seem to go north, the county line, not south. So we are trying to argue that there's a transit element to that. There's more investment in transit. But we have a very unique, we have 14 miles of I-205 that has no alternative from point A to point B. Town center to Wilsonville. If you want to get from point A to point B, there is no transit that will get you there. There is no alternative. That is the only section of all of these freeways mandated in the HB 2017 to be tolled that has no alternative.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're okay to move on?
I think we're okay to move on, but I do think a political strategy.
Yeah.
So when I asked that question, I don't have an answer for that.
Yep.
And we as commissioners, who do we need to be talking to? Who do we need to be influencing? How do we make sure that half of that committee doesn't decide to toll all of 205 as a recommendation to the transportation?
Well, which is part of why, if you recall, I did want to have a retreat to really talk about how we externally negotiate a number of these things, housing, number of things. And this is certainly one of them.
Yeah.
So typically...
Well, sooner than later, because the train seems to be moving pretty fast.
So just so you know, to give you a little bit of comfort, almost every week I have a meeting with our transportation staff and PGA staff on these exact things. How do we navigate this? You know, whether I have Chris Lyons or Trent Wilson or Gary Schmidt and our transportation experts navigate this. So we are doing just that, trying to figure out. And I've been pretty active in making sure the Chamber of Commerce, that the CCBA, all these organizations are informed. So I'm informing them, trying to get feedback, trying to get C4 involved. I'd encourage you to attend the C4 meeting.
Yeah, they did vote.
Yeah.
I would say that Paul is starting to be listened to.
Good.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, if we can all carry that message, and if there's a real threat that they're looking at tolling all of 205, we really need to activate our
Well, we'll just build a wall. What's next?
Okay, we have several items. Really quickly, we have just coming up this week for you all, budget committee meeting tomorrow morning at 9:30, and then our board meeting is pretty packed. We have a housing authority public hearing and consent agenda. We have several public hearings on boundary changes as well as on street lighting and a fairly long consent agenda.
Those are pretty easy.
Yeah. Yes, the street lightings are. I would like to invite Gary Schmidt up to talk about the May 2018 state legislative special session, or Chris Lyons maybe instead of Gary.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chris Lyons, PGA. Just here to give you a quick update that next week is not only legislative days at the legislature, but it is also a special session, which the governor announced a few weeks ago. So just quick background on what that is. So you may know that in the 2018 legislative session, legislature passed a bill that decoupled the state from the federal tax code, and it was kind of in direct response to the federal tax cut law that was passed in 2017. What that did is it denied pass-through businesses the ability to claim a 20% income deduction on their state tax returns. Under that new federal law, those businesses were entitled to this 20% deduction. And that would have resulted in about a $200 million per year tax cut on those businesses. The governor is looking to expand an existing state tax break for certain sole proprietorships that fit into that category that would restore about $20 to $30 million of that total $200 million per year. So a special committee was formed, co-chaired by Speaker Kotek, President Courtney, and others, and they will be having a meeting tomorrow, the first committee meeting of this group, to have public testimony on a draft bill, LC1, with a plan to convene during Monday of next week's legislative days, and at some point during the week pass a revised version of this bill. The politics are very tricky, and they're trying to, I think, still figure out if they have the votes for something like this, but that's really the background. We've connected with the North Clackamas Chamber. They are supportive of this bill, as it would support small businesses.
So it's, oh, go ahead.
So, Chris, just a clarification. I just want to just make sure I'm right. So as I, you kind of explained it, but I just want to add one other element of clarification. So the federal tax plan changed, basically, which amounted to a $200 million tax break for businesses in Oregon, of which would not have any negative impact on the state at the time, right? It's not state monies that were refunded back. It was simply federal monies that were back. The legislature acted in the bill, gobbled that up and say, no, we're going to take that $200 million essentially. And now this legislative session is we're going to give maybe 10 or 20% of that possibly back to the businesses. So I want to make sure I understand it right.
Small businesses, though.
Yeah, small businesses.
That's my understanding, yeah. Yes.
So the reason that the business community is up in arms about it is it's really, it was their money that, in a sense, I'll use their words, confiscated by the state. And that's why there's a big upset about that.
Yes, okay. I think, you know, there's still a big gap that is not being returned.
All right.
So.
So what's our role in this? You'll be there monitoring?
Yeah, we will monitor. I feel that this is beyond the scope of the county, and I've not heard of any other local jurisdictions weighing in on this issue.
Okay.
So we will, you know, monitor it. We'll be in contact with the North Clackamas Chamber, and if something, I think, changes in what they're looking to do, and they're really trying to keep this very limited so that this doesn't become a bigger, the scope of the bill doesn't expand, or their fear has been that opening up a special session could become a feeding frenzy of other issues, but they've really limited the scope. So assuming that's the case, I don't see things changing, but if things do, we could certainly bring it back to you for
So you're just monitoring, we are taking no position.
That's correct.
So this is currently a single issue, single bill session.
Yes, yep. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks,
Chris. Dan Chandler, can you come up and give us a real quick update on the housing needs assessment funding?
This should take about an hour.
As Laurel said, this is an update on the housing needs assessment to let you know about a potential funding opportunity and your options related to that funding opportunity and what it would do to the timing of the housing needs assessment. You'll recall that this came out of a C4 discussion that we would do a countywide housing needs assessment with participating interested cities. Some cities are up to date on their housing needs assessment and wouldn't participate. Other cities were on the fence. So we sent out an RFP, got two responses, selection committee, which included city elected officials, selected preferred vendor, Eco Northwest. Their proposal was at a cost of about $180,000. We were in the process of reaching back out to the cities and then meeting with you to talk about the relative cost shares. The plan was the county would pick up a significant share based on population and possibly an additional share because the county requested additional analytical work beyond what a goal 10 needs assessment would provide. We wanted to know a little bit more about our housing affordability issues than you would get from a standard land use based needs assessment. What happened then was in the short session, House Bill 4006 passed, allocated $1.7 million towards affordable housing studies, code audits, and some other things. The grant application form came out just last week. We're not certain. We have a number of questions we need to ask them about how well our program fits and how we fit our program into the grant. But we believe that what we're doing puts us really ahead of most folks in terms of what Speaker Kotek wanted. This funding opportunity was really hers, and we've got a pretty good articulation of what she wanted, which doesn't line up exactly what came out in the form from the department. In any event, the application is due on June 15th, and we would expect a decision sometime soon after that. If we go ahead and apply, we would wait, right? Our plan would be to have the state fund all of this. We could reserve the money from the housing policy level proposal, the housing affordability PLP that will come before you in the budget. There would be money there to cover it if the state doesn't fund the grant. We could go ahead and just sign the contract with Eco Northwest, fund it ourselves, get going, and maybe try to get money back from the cities. Or again, we could apply, wait to see whether we get the state money. Our recommendation is we go ahead and wait. Let's go ahead and see if we get the state money. That $180,000 or $100,000 would be the county share, could go towards other things that would help homelessness and housing affordability. The consequence would be that there would be some delay in getting the housing study started. The state wants to go ahead and hire the consultants itself. Mm-hmm. So there would be some delay. But the commitment is, if you get the money, you've got to commit to have a hearing-ready draft by the end of June, end of May, I think, next year. So there's an impressed timeline.
I think it's worth waiting.
So anyway.
Do you have an idea of
the cities weren't.
Well, the application's due June 15th. You know, they've said that they would get, it's a short application. They said they would get back to us fairly quickly. Then it's going to be a matter of just waiting to do an MOU with the state and for the state to go ahead and contract with our vendor. So to finish answering your question, I'm thinking early August probably we would get going.
Was that completion in May?
Having a hearing-ready draft. So you'd prepare, the consultant paid by the state would go ahead and get you a draft ready that was ready to take forward to a hearing with your planning commission. It wouldn't have to be final.
You mean a draft of the study?
A draft of the study, and this is one of the questions we have, some comprehensive plan amendments to deal with the housing issues identified in the study.
So, Dan, how much money would we stand to gain by applying for the grant?
Depending on how much the county would have paid, but what the discussion was, the county would pay somewhere around $80,000 to $100,000 of the total 180.
And the grant would pay all of that?
The grant would pay all of that plus the share we would have to try to get from the cities. And you know, it was unclear in those discussions whether certain cities would participate at all. And we were kind of in that process of negotiating with them, telling them specifically, here's what you get for your money, here's the amount of staff time you would require, all those questions that we heard when we met with them.
So what our study would be as comprehensive, nothing that the state study or grant would invalidate. It's not a question of validation. It's not the quality of the report, the information. My concern really is only 1 year delay or more from what we would actually have a finished product versus jumping through all the hoops.
Is it a 1 year delay?
And so it sounds to me like a
1 year delay. No. I'm sorry, Commissioner. No. It would be, we think the study will take six months to do. If we try to get started in June, it would still take 6 or 7 months to get it done. So it would be about a 2 month. We're thinking it's probably a two month delay.
Okay, if it's only 2 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when do we end up with a report in hand?
May.
No. The housing needs work, we would probably have start in August, September, October, November, December, January, February.
We'd have it in hand?
Yeah.
If we wait?
Yeah.
Oh, and the draft amendments to code or whatever
would come later. One option I would add to this is if we apply for the grant, we'll probably be back go ahead and fund Eco Northwest to start to do some of the consulting work with our Housing Advisory Task Force. As a separate contract in the meantime to get them going so we can get their expertise.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Yep.
We didn't want to divert without talking to you first, so thank you.
Yeah, French Prairie Bridge.
Karen Berrig's going to talk to us about the French Prairie Bridge resolution,
I've
been gone out.
I'm just going to jump into this real quick because I'm on the task force. They basically had three bridge alignments. One went over wetlands, was really close to the freeway, and over housing. That one was pretty much eliminated right away. The second one kind of went through our marina, taking out buildings, pretty impactful to the marina. The third one was next to the railroad tracks and aligns with Boone's Ferry on the other side, would go over, is that Butteville Road?
It would go over Butteville Road.
Yeah, that's Butteville Road. And then a landing site on the other side. All this is saying is that Clackamas County and Wilsonville will work together to move forward and to study this and then to look at potential mitigation of Boone's Ferry Marina, Butteville Road, and French Prairie Bridge. And so that's really all this resolution does.
Correct. The task force made a recommendation for the alignment, the W1 alignment, as Chair Bernard indicated, and the City of Wilsonville was interested in having the Board of County Commissioners adopt a resolution recognizing the task force recommendation for bridge location. The next step is to identify a bridge type and begin to do initial design so that they can identify draft costs. Since the bridge start on one side is in the city of Wilsonville, on the other side is Clackamas County, they felt that it would be appropriate to be able to have a resolution recognizing this stage of the process. So we're here to see if this is something that the board would like to do, is adopt the resolution, and then we can put it on a business meeting agenda. In addition, whether or not a public hearing, if the board is interested in a public hearing regarding the resolution, or whether or not it should just be on the consent agenda.
I just want to add that this was funded, the study, a long time ago.
Yes.
Gosh, it must have been 5-6 years ago.
Well, it was awarded an MTIP grant, Regional Flexible Funds, in 2010-2013, okay. During that cycle.
I want to add, it's an emergency bridge in the case of failure, the Boone's Bridge, for emergency vehicles only. There's no money necessarily available to build the bridge. And so it's just to continue the study, and that's basically what this is asking us to do is, yes, Sonia.
I see you have the map. Can you just hold it up for me and show me which bridge?
I actually have a couple of copies. So we came about a year ago in April and gave an overview of the project, and then just last month, as we were moving towards the task force recommendation, and the board had supported Chair Bernard in that meeting in supporting the W1 alignment.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it was the one I was thinking.
Okay,
so that's good.
So my comment is nothing to do with the alignment per se, but just want to just get on the record again that my concern about this bridge is the safety and connections to the Charbonneau area and other areas as far as bicyclists and pets. I mean, as I kind of described it earlier in a conversation I had with Jim, I'm kind of concerned that we're providing a bridge into a kind of a dangerous area, perhaps peril or a risk, that until, or you know, again, as design goes on, that there are really some safety accommodations that are made in bike lanes, some kind of crossings to get on the other side of the of what would be the Charbonneau area, the freeway, if you will, going over the Miley Road, that there's bike ped facilities that take into consideration all aspects of safety, because that's, and parking as well. So again, on the record, those are my concerns.
So the resolution currently, one of the statements says the City of Wilsonville will continue to work with Clackamas County and staff through bridge type selection and future project design to address concerns and mitigate potential impacts to the Boone's Ferry Marina and Butteville Road due to the construction and operation of the French Prairie Bridge. Would you like us to add address connections to Charbonneau, pedestrian and bicycle?
Safety, parking, in a way, this is not totally related, but when the mayor was here at a business meeting talking about the annexation of Frog Pond, I got the distinct impression that their concerns or finances should be with really within their city limits, and this is not going to be in their city limits. Mm-hmm. So, again, for the safety of the future bicyclists, pets, anyone crossing that bridge, that's on us.
Mm-hmm.
It's not on Wilsonville, and we need to be a strong voice on that. So I want to make sure that's covered. So
okay.
If you could maybe take my comments today and incorporate, I'd be happy. But
sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is maintenance. Is that
right.
I don't see that in here
anywhere.
Okay.
So we can add that in.
Yeah. Because that's who takes care of the bridge. Ken.
So how much money has been spent studying this bridge?
I think $3 million.
I believe that the contract was $1.3 million.
Oh.
Yeah. For this project, and we're two-thirds of the way through.
We have contributed nothing except my time and your time.
Right.
Who spent the money?
They got it from AMTIP?
Yeah, Regional Flexible Fund, so it's regional money, and then the city of Wilsonville has provided the match, the matching funds.
And not us.
And how much do you anticipate spending going further with planning?
I can't speak to that, you know, in the sense of I don't know how much is actually left of the grant, but I don't know that beyond this 1.3 million, if the city of Wilsonville has scheduled the next level of design that they would need to move forward with the project.
And do we have any idea when we could expect a bridge to be funded and built?
No.
No.
Nope.
So I guess my question is, if there's no known future date, it could be 25 years before anything gets built. And the factors on the ground could change.
Sure.
Which would obviate any plans that have been made up to that point. I'm just wondering why we continue to study something that there is no foreseeable plan and funding in place to actually build.
Well, if there's one thing I heard from the federal government when I was there, is that you better be ready to do your project or you're not going to get any money.
Yep.
So.
But when you look at the other, I guess my question is, when you look at all the other transportation needs that we have that are significantly more pressing, where's the money coming from?
Well, I would compete for the money, that's for sure.
So to Jim's point, there's something called project readiness. So there is money designed really to ready projects so that in the event monies come up or funding comes up for a particular project, great. Now, the other argument is that you want to have those monies spent on the projects that are most likely to succeed versus those that are not. So one factor that's commonly used in transportation projects is really the who benefits and people served. So this bridge, unlike a lot of other bridges within the urban area, have populations on both sides. This really does not have much population on the county side. This is more of a trail kind of a bridge than it is a connection to a urban center.
In other words,
connection
it's a recreational bridge.
It's a recreational bridge. There's no connection to commerce, to business, to employment.
But it's also an emergency access bridge, should the Boone Bridge, which is not earthquake ready, fall. Anyway.
Yeah, and I'd also say that completing out this project provides the ability to have a more refined cost estimate that they started out with. And that truly is one of the most immediate steps in moving towards getting funding, is knowing how much you're asking for. So that's at least the intent of this particular phase of the project, is being able to refine that cost estimate by having a more refined bridge type as well as location. So they started with the location.
It also could be one pocket of money versus, I mean, it'd be bike ped money, right? More likely.
So this should go forward, I guess.
With the amendments.
With the amendments on the consent agenda or with the ability to
As long as you get it in there and they're okay with it, I'm okay with it. We address the issues Paul had and maintenance.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Karen. I want to bully through because we only have a few scheduling items that Caroline can take care of before first works policy session.
Okay, so the first item I have on the list is for Monday, May 21st. It is a Clackamas High School leadership presentation. It's at 6 in the evening at Clackamas High School. Okay. You can talk to your
friend. I'm going to look at this in the
office.
Yes. Audience, so.
Yeah. Do you need to know now? It gives us an idea, but if not, you can just check in with your staff and let them know. Yeah.
It's just hard. So I mean, it's like, yeah, I'd love to go. I just don't know what else is going on.
And it's at Clackamas High School.
Yes.
Right.
And
don't take silences like not interesting.
Thursday, May 31st, it's the West Side Economic Alliance, talking issues with the West Side mayors at 7:30 in the morning at Embassy Suites. That's according to the calendars, Commissioners Bernard and Savas already have it on their calendars. But we do have a budget committee meeting. Oh, it says 8:30, but we don't start until 9:30, I'm pretty sure.
So I always have this on my calendar as tentative.
Yeah, me too. So
and I will not be going to it.
You will not?
There's no way I can make it. As a matter of fact, I'm more inclined to go to the CCBA forum that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the one
Do they have the forum?
At Harmony.
The CCBA forum.
That's good. They're moving it over to Harmony?
Yes, we asked them to move it kind of our side when possible.
Good.
Is that the one that Congressman Schrader was at? Yeah, can we all go to that?
I can try to find the information and share with your staff.
If we do, then we certainly need to postpone the budget committee start.
Uh-oh, I just deleted the wrong thing.
Budget committee meeting start time.
I'll take a look at it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, yep, and that's all I have.
You need to add the budget committee meeting back to my calendar. I just deleted it accidentally.
I guess we don't have budget that day.
Is that a Caroline?
What's the date for the CCBA?
We just deleted the budget for the year.
When's our day off for the budget? We not doing the budget this year?
It is May 31st, CCBA.
At Harmony?
At Harmony Campus.
And the time?
7:30.
It's Harmony, much better, much better.
I will take a look at the calendar and talk to Dan about a late start for that day.
All right, our first policy session, for that, I'd like to invite up procurement